Hi, everyone. This is the Broke Girl Society podcast. I'm your host, Christina. Thank you so much for listening in. Today's episode is going to be brought to you by our sponsors, the Better Institute, where people go to get better. You can find them at betterinstitute.com. And our new sponsor, Birch's Health, an online gambling addiction therapy. You can do it all online. You can find them at birchshealth.com. Therapy is an amazing tool to add to your toolbox in recovery. It's a great way to stop that bleeding and start that healing. So please check them out. Hey everyone, in this episode, we have Alyssa Watley. She's a tax attorney with ATL Tax Lawyers, and she is here to share her tips and tricks on how to navigate IRS issues. This is something that a lot of us in recovery have struggled with, and so I found her on TikTok. She is putting out all this great information about how to navigate the IRS on her own. And I reached out to her and asked her if she would be interested in coming and doing an episode with me. And she said yes. So here is that episode where we kind of talk about what some of the notices from the IRS mean and how to navigate things or take steps to work out some of these issues. Now, not every issue we're going to be able to handle on our own. And in some cases, it's best to have an advocate like a CPA or a tax attorney to help navigate the IRS. But I think for, you know, her conversation, she talks about a lot of the issues that we can learn to navigate on our own. She also does a workshop that teaches you how to navigate the IRS. You can find all that information on her website at ATLTaxLawyers.com. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you. All right. So I want to welcome Alyssa Watley with ATL Tax Lawyers. She's going to help us figure out our tax problems as people in recovery, people trying to figure this out. I know for myself, when I came out of my own gambling, I hadn't filed some taxes for a few years, and I'm not going to get into my own story too much. Because you guys know how I feel about all that. But so help us, please, Alyssa. Thank you so much.
Yeah, so, you know, the first thing that normally happens when people call me is, you know, some combination of tears and fear. And they're
scared. I feel
scared.
That so much.
Yeah, they're just scared. And so part of my job as a tax attorney, I think, is mostly telling people it's going to be fine. It's going to be okay. I always tell people, the thing I always start out with is I have people that owe $100,000 and I've got people that owe $20 million and everybody's doing fine. We're all good. Most of my clients don't have any like real criminal issues or anything like that. I think most people's biggest fear is their first question is, am I going to jail? No, mainly no. I would say mostly no, very unlikely. It is a crime not to file your tax returns. Obviously, you know, if you're going through something, you know, like addiction of any kind or a mental or physical health issue, those are all reasons why people won't or haven't filed back taxes, but that is okay. And so most people are just like, I'm so lost. Where do I even start?
Right. There's so much to this. I think one of the biggest things that I run into when I'm talking to people and that I've experience myself is like that overwhelm, right? So let's just kind of start here. When I first entered recovery, you know, I was behind on my taxes, behind on everything, like you name it, I was behind on it. Yeah. And so then, you know, so the financial aspect is a huge issue, right? It's not like I could just pay my back taxes, and it's not like right. I could, and even the thought of having to figure this out on my own was so overwhelming, but the thought of having to pay somebody to help me figure this out, like I couldn't do it. I didn't have it. And so that is really, really scary too. And it's not like I wanted somebody to do it for free. It was just trying to figure out, how do I do this?
Yeah. And how do you get started? So the first thing that people need to know is the general rule, if you haven't filed back taxes, is you don't have to file every single missing return. So I've had people come like, I haven't filed in 30 years. Well, we're not going to turn around and sit here and try to file 30 years of returns. The general rule for IRS compliance, and this is a general, it's just a policy rule. It's not like a hard rule. Could they make you file more returns? Yes. Is 6 years. So, you know, you just count backwards from the current year, you know, like 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. And then, you know, next year it will be 18 through 23. So, in order to be considered in compliance, you need to start with the past 6 years. And then most people are like, oh man, I don't know what I was doing in 2017. You know, especially if you're gambling and you play a lot of different places, or you go to a lot of different casinos, you might not have an idea of where you even won money. So one of the first things that I recommend is creating an IRS.gov account if you don't already have one. It's very simple to set up. Now, the only issue there is you might not be able to set up an account if you haven't filed in the past 6 years, because they might not have a way to verify your identity. In that case, you can go on IRS.gov. There should be a section there about getting transcripts. And what people should do is request their wage and income transcripts. It's a specific type of IRS record, and it's a great starting point, not just for gamblers, but for anybody that hasn't filed, because it's going to immediately tell you who reported information under your social security number and how much. And so that's like the first clue. It's like a roadmap, is how I explain it. It kind of gives you, like, oh, you know, Harris reported this, and then this person reported this, and this person, and I got a W-2 over here. So immediately kind of takes you back into that moment. And although you have a duty to report everything that is taxable, having everything reported by third parties is at least a good starting point to get an accurate return, right? So most of those W-2Gs, those winning statements from casinos or any kind of gambling, you know, gambling with an establishment, you're probably going to get a W-2G. And so that's just a great place to start. Go get your wage and income transcripts for the past 6 years. And then I would also get what's called an account transcript. And an account transcript will tell you if you filed or not. And basically, like, a little history of your account. So it will show you what you filed, if you didn't file, if you have any estimated payments on there. And the other thing that's really helpful about account transcripts, and what is common with people that haven't filed back taxes, is if you had a lot of income reported under your social and you failed to file because you have something going on, the government can do a return for you. And it's called a substitute for a return. And it's never going to be right because the government and only has the information that's been reported to them. So in a gambling situation, they got the information that was reported to them, which is that you won income gambling. What they do not know is what your gambling losses were, if you're married, if you have dependents, if you have deductions. They don't know any of that stuff. So if you do have a substitute return, an account transcript could show you, hey, look, the government did this return for you, and now you might want to take the opportunity to go back and file an original return. Take the wage and income transcripts as your baseline. Go back to the bank, go get your bank records, your credit card statements. If you use a player's card, you know, I would always recommend, if you are a gambler, that you keep track of all your wagers, all your bets. You're supposed to keep a log. It's supposed to be in real time. Now, we all know it's like a mileage log. Anytime I ask somebody, they're like, oh, I rode off 15,000 miles. I'm like, every time you got in your car, did you tell me where you're going from point A to point B and how many miles? No, they didn't do that. They didn't, right? But ideally, if you are gambling a lot, you do want to keep your bank records. You do want to keep a journal of what you're betting. You do want to use your player's card. You do want to keep all those records so you know what your bets are, how much money you've put in. And then you can kind of go back and reconstruct those records to do the best return that you can come up with. You know? Now, I've had people that had a bunch of substitute FOIA returns, and they've been dodging and weaving the IRS for a while. And in that case, like, sometimes their records are too old. Like, let's say it's from like 2012, right? And the government did a return for them in, you know, 2014. Well, there is a statute of limitations on tax debt, right? So it's 10 years from the assessment date. So if the government did that in 2014, the statute would be 2024, and 2024 is next year. In cases like that, where the records are old, we're probably not going to be able to fix it. Generally, what we do is, if the IRS is not bothering them and the statute's going to run, we let it just run its course and people end up not paying that money back. The taxes will expire and they become no longer legally enforceable. And then they go file their current returns. I used to have a woman who was a big time gambler, and I gave her her chart and all of her taxes were going to expire. A lot of them were SFRs. And every time she had a tax year expire, she would call me and be like, "Do you want to go to Vegas?" I'm like, "No, I can't go to Vegas. We've got to let those taxes expire. We're not going anywhere, girlfriend." But she had like $300,000 of improper tax assessments expire because she didn't have records and we weren't able to fix it. So my main takeaway here is, once you're back on the wagon where you're like, okay, I got to get my life together, it's really not scary. The IRS has the information that's being reported to them. And then that's going to be a roadmap for, you're going to have to take a little action, right? Go get the bank records, go get the credit card statements, go get, any information you can from the casinos. If you're a regular at a casino and you have the player's card, a lot of times they have those win-loss statements. And start, putting your little treasure trove of evidence together. And then you can either, TurboTax it if it's pretty simple, or hire a CPA at that point to file proper returns. I think the hard part about gambling income reporting is knowing where it goes and on what form and why. That is kind of hard for people. The general consensus is if you're a hobby gambler, you're not a professional gambler, that information generally will get reported on W-2G, right? And that's reported on your 1040 on Schedule 1 under 8B as other income, right? And it has to go there. And then your losses have to go on Schedule A, which is itemized deductions. And so the problem becomes, if you don't itemize your deductions, you don't get to take any gambling losses, right? And that kind of sucks. Well, the issue now is, like, back in the day, like pre-Tax Cut and Jobs Act, the deductions were pretty low. Like, the standard deduction was pretty low. I don't know them off the top of my head right now. I'm a tax attorney. So, for example, in 2023, it's for a single person, it's $13,850. For married filing separately, it's $13,850. Married filing jointly or qualified widower, it's $27,700. And head of household is $20,800. So the problem becomes, right, like, let's use $10,000, right? Let's say you had a $10,000 W-2G and you got a $10,000 loss, right? And you're married filing jointly. But the $10,000 has to go on Schedule 1, 8B under other income, right? And then let's say when you go to do your itemized deductions, there's a state and local SALT cap right now for property taxes and state income tax at 10 grand. That was also changed during the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. So if you live in a high taxation state like California or New York, you're not getting to write off all of your state tax and your SALT tax, basically. And so you're capped at $10,000. So if you only have $10,000 of state and local tax, and you don't have any, let's say, health insurance, and you don't own a home, right? So you don't have mortgage insurance, and you got $10,000 of gambling losses. Well, that's only $20,000, and the married filing jointly is $27,700. So in that scenario, we would end up using the standard deduction, and now we don't even get to claim those $10,000 of losses, which kind of sucks because now your AGI went up. But that's just kind of how it works. So people get confused, like, do I do the standard deduction or do I itemize? The right answer to that question is whatever is higher.
Yeah.
Right. So you do need to calculate both ways. And then if you're using software like TurboTax, I generally don't like people doing that. Some people get a little, creative. Don't get creative. If you don't have charitable contributions and mortgage interest and gambling losses and SALT tax and medical expenses that exceed the standard, then you need to take the standard, right? Yeah. But then that's going to hurt you a little bit because you're not getting to claim any of those gambling losses. And you can only claim gambling losses up to your winnings, right? So you can't take a gambling loss that's more than the winnings that you had. So that's one of the rules. The other rule that's really hard to distinguish is, just want to throw it out there, is there's a difference between somebody who's gambling as a hobby and someone who's gambling professionally, how that income is reported. If someone's gambling professionally, they actually report that income on a Schedule C as a business income, and then they get to deduct their business expenses and including, you know, their losses. And before the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, professional gamblers could actually create like a net operating loss from their non-wager expenses. And then after the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, they took that away. So that really hurt professional gamblers not being able to create a loss and then be able to carry it forward. So, and then back on just regular, you know, everyday people that are gambling, you don't, if you don't use your losses, you don't, you can't roll them forward or backwards, right? So you lose them.
Right. Well, I think for some of us, like myself, who gambled for about 15 years, towards the end of my gambling career, I call it a career because that's what it feels like. I was literally working for the casino. So I was trying to figure out a way to make that like my job because really, I mean, I was taking my paycheck and literally like paying the casino. So it was like, well, how can I get deductions for this? Like I'm paying their salary, but yeah, sorry, had to throw that out.
I mean,
know a lot of people are like feeling that way too. Like it felt like I was working for the casino.
I mean, it can feel like, and if people have questions like, am I a full-time professional gambler or not? Obviously that is a legal question. And so what the factors the government looks at is, I'll just tell you what the factors are so people know, because some people on here might actually, you know,
maybe, yeah, try and like, that was our goal originally, was trying to do it professionally.
Right. So the things we're looking at is how the taxpayer carries on the activity, right? Like, are they doing it in a business-like manner? Or is it something more like a hobby, right? Are they keeping books and records? Are they maintaining good journals about what they're doing and like trying to create a profit from this? Their expertise. So like, are they going out and obtaining knowledge? Do they get like coaches? Are they, you know, trying to enhance their skill? Because there are some people that, you know, do have coaches and do different strategies and read books and go to seminars and try to get better at their craft, right? How much time and effort you spend. So, you know, if you're working 60 hours a week, you know, at your Wall Street job and gambling, you know, on the weekends, that's probably not going to work, right? But if you're spending most of your time, 40 or 50, 60 hours a week in a casino gambling, and that's your only source of income, then yeah, that looks more like a profession, not like a hobby. Let's see, their success in other activities, history of income and losses from the activities. Like, are they always losing money or do they sometimes, like if they're always losing money and there's no profit ever, then is that really, are they really operating for a business, right? Or is it just losses, their financial status, and whether the activity promotes recreation or involves personal motives. So, you know, there are cases that can be made for certain people that are professional gamblers, but most people are probably just going to fall in that amateur category. It's a hobby, something they enjoy doing. And that income's, yeah, it's going to get reported, you know, on that Schedule 1A, 1-8B. And then those losses, if they're allowed to, are going to be on the Schedule A. And then, you know, I also think that you just have to be really good with the record keeping, because what is happening right now, I'm not trying to scare anybody, but it's not just happening with gamblers. It's happening with cryptocurrency. It's happening with home sales. The government didn't used to get as much third-party data as they do now, right? Like, it's just a fact. And then what the government is doing is using artificial intelligence to see if what you filed and what the third party filed match. And when they don't match, it automatically generates a notice called a CP 2000. And so that's where I find most gamblers get caught up. So maybe they had filed returns, but then, you know, I've seen people that have 50 W-2Gs, like,
oh yeah,
100.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, their transcripts are very long. I had a person the other day, stock trader, you know, there must have been, I think his transcripts were like 200 pages of 1099Bs of the stock transactions, like buying and selling, or the proceeds from the sale of his trading. And so what happens is maybe you didn't catch them all, yeah. Right? And so maybe you did file and then the government sent you a notice, but maybe you weren't paying attention. They will change your return if you don't respond, right?
I've had that happen.
Yeah.
I left a 1099 off and they sent me a letter saying that I owe this amount of money. It wasn't a scary letter. It was just a letter saying, hey, this is the discrepancy. You owe this amount of money, pay it and we're good.
Yeah. So when you get a CP2000, all that means from the government is that the computer has information that doesn't match what's on your return. And sometimes it's because somebody put it on the wrong line. So like if you put it on the wrong line, let's say you're doing it on TurboTax and the computer is looking at for specifically on another line, that might get kicked out, even though the total amount's the same. Like I had a lady the other day put income, it was on Schedule C, but she put it on a different line. And so it, you know, it generated this huge under reporter notice and she already claimed that income. The computer just didn't know where to look for it. So if you leave something off, if it's improperly, you know, I have issues where things are improperly inputted or reported under someone's social when they should have been reported under a business EIN. That doesn't really happen to gamblers, but you know, there's all kinds of reporting issues. And with gamblers, the thing is not claiming all the 1099s or the W-2Gs, and you have so many. So trying to keep up with those records, maybe sometimes also a good idea, if you have so many of them and you're unsure, you can always file an extension, right? And then wait till the summer. And then that's when wage and income transcripts are available. You know, that's another yeah. option. The money's still due in April. So if you don't pay in April, like, you know, you need to guesstimate. And depending on how much the W-2G is for, sometimes taxes are withheld. That's the other thing, right? So you got to look at that box. If it's over a certain dollar amount, they might withhold, I think it's like 24%. If you do not give them your social, they'll withhold a higher amount. And just because they withhold an amount doesn't necessarily mean it's the correct amount.
Right.
And that's a hard concept.
Because that's a variable depending on other factors.
Right. Like how much tax you end up owing as a taxpayer's, you know, your filing status, dependents, deductions, credits. So they're withholding at a standard amount and it may be too much or it may be too little. So just because you had withholding on a W-2G doesn't mean it's the correct amount and that you're not going to owe any more tax. So that's also something you have to be thinking about when you go to file your returns and setting money aside to pay taxes if you have a pretty big payout.
Well, I've got a question for you. I'm going to see if this throws you off because this is something that I hear or, and you know, so if somebody is coming out of a years long gambling addiction, right? And there's a lot that goes into that. There's a lot of like mental health issues. You know, there's a lot that goes into coming out of it. You know, we're in survival mode. Here's the thing. What if they bounced around different banks, bounced around, like you said, kind of different online casinos or different casinos, and their records are a mess? What if they don't even know what bank accounts they had 4 years ago? And, you know, maybe they're being faced with an audit or maybe they're being faced with, you know, just needing to come up with these records, but they don't really have it. Like what is, and the reason why I say this, because I've had this conversation with so many people, like what is the best case scenario? What is the worst case scenario in a situation like that? They're trying to clean up their tax mess, but they don't necessarily have all the records. We've got what the IRS has, right? And we can build off of that. But as far as like any kind of like backups, any kind of logs, maybe even don't even have bank statements to verify ATM withdrawals, like losses, like what kind of situation does that put them in, and how can they best work it out? I wanted to give you a tough one. Because this is addiction and the chaos of it, right?
Now, well, I mean, most taxpayers don't have good records.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's, I mean, business owners, I mean, 99% of the audits I do, people don't have good records, right? And that's how we got there. But unfortunately, you know, as a taxpayer in a civil matter, you have the burden of proof, right? So if you don't have the records, the government doesn't have to give you the deduction, okay, right? So a lot of times, you know, we'll do our best to piece it together. You know, again, if they, sometimes the player's cards, those aren't conclusive either. Like sometimes the government's like, well, the player's card and that information's not enough. But sometimes, you know, if we can just get a piecemeal of information, sometimes it is enough. It really is a case by case thing. Like I had a lady, a tax court case I just solved. This is not gambling related, but the records issue was always an issue in tax. Nobody's got records. People tell me they do. And then, you know, we'll be in the middle of their case. And I'm like, no, I ain't got nothing.
Yeah.
So we work with what we have. And in that case, you probably do need an advocate because it's kind of hard. You know, people send me stuff and we try to work with what they have. But like in this particular case, this woman got some kind of payout for insurance. She claimed, and it, depending on how you pay for this insurance, depends on how it's taxable. So if you paid for it with pre-tax dollars versus post-tax dollars is treated differently. So she claims she doesn't have those records anymore. And she had already been audited by the IRS for that specific issue. She had said she sent in information and then they closed her audit with no change. So this happens like 5 years later, same issue. So we just sent the letter that she had and her letter that she responded 5 years ago and said she filed her tax return based on this previous audit for the same issue. Now that won't work for gambling issues. But my point is, like, we had very limited information there and we were still able to get that corrected. It just depends on what you can come up with. Now, if you have absolutely nothing, that's going to be hard, right?
Take it to the worst case scenario. Like,
worst case scenario, you have nothing. They're not going to give you any deduction. So you're not going to get any losses. Well, then we look at, well, does this person even have the ability to pay the tax back? Because it doesn't even matter, right? Like, I had a case one time, they owed $5 million or something. The business is closed. They don't have anything. What are you going to do? Who cares? They could owe $500,000. They could owe $5 million. At the end of the day, if there's no ability to pay, then it doesn't really matter how much they owe. And so sometimes tax problems, I used to work for a tax attorney that would say, like, you only have to win once. And he would be like, sometimes we win by correcting the tax. Sometimes we win by settling the tax. Sometimes we win by outrunning the tax. It doesn't really matter as long there's always a path is the answer. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, it does. It's like you're able to figure it out. And it probably really depends too on the situation that they're faced. If they're dealing with kind of like who they're dealing with, right? If they're dealing with a specific IRS person, that is probably going to be dependent on the person you're dealing with as well, right? How
it seems a little unfair, and I hate to say this, but the IRS agents have so much discretion, right? And like a lot of the tax standards and cases are about whether or not they abuse their discretion. And so you will have the same case, right? I'll have the same exact case, slightly different facts. One IRS agent will say, yeah, sure, I'll be happy to accept that information. Another agent will say, this is not sufficient. It's all about how they feel that day, which is wildly not fair. And it's not really supposed to work that way. But that is a lot of times how the system works. You don't get consistent answers from everyone at the IRS. It really does depend on who you're working with. And it does pretend like depend on the facts of the particular case. You know, sometimes we get great results. It's like with the penalty waivers, right? So like mental or physical disability, addiction, all those things would qualify for like a reasonable cause abatement generally. Getting proof of a person's addiction or anything like that is generally sometimes hard, right? Or we'd have to get somebody else to like say that they have this or some kind of medical write-up or a psychologist or, you know, something. Yeah. But like I've had one where I had a client that had dementia and they were like, this is not sufficient. He should have filed his tax returns. And it's like, because he didn't get diagnosed with dementia until like 3 years after or whatever. And it was like, but don't you know that's how dementia works, is that people go undiagnosed for a very long time. And then eventually it becomes so bad that someone in their family or, you know, someone near them takes them to get evaluated and they find out they have dementia, but they've been going undiagnosed for years. And so I just thought it was the most unreasonable response I've ever heard, with like, oh, dementia doesn't qualify for, you know, a reasonable cause abatement for filing late. And it's like, this man doesn't even know where he lives. And so I had medical records saying somebody had dementia, but they wanted an affidavit from his friends and family saying he didn't know his name or how to drive around 4 years before he got that diagnosis. Like, okay, if that makes you feel better. But like, it's reasonable to assume that somebody with a dementia diagnosis has a late diagnosis and goes undiagnosed for many years, right? I'm just saying, like, that's a ridiculous response. We had to go to appeals. We eventually won. That seems like it shouldn't be that hard.
Yeah, and it shouldn't have cost that much back towards the taxpayers. Yeah, wow.
But it does. And so that's why, you know, with the record thing, it kind of depends. But you want to try to, we do get creative, like, especially with people like business expenses, like, well, go through your emails, go through this, go through that. The thing that's harder these days is because everything is electronic. The like, dog ate my homework, I don't have any records issue is actually a harder feat than it used to be. Like, I would say in the, maybe the 80s, the 70s, 80s or 90s, or even early 2000s, business owners would be like, oh, well, you know, I don't have a records. My, you know, a blizzard destroyed all my business documents and I don't have any of my invoices, or, you know, I don't have any of my stuff anymore. And these days I feel like it's a harder sell, because there are ways to find out what bank accounts you had. Maybe you got an email confirmation or phone. Like, there are more, everything that you do in your life these days is more recorded, and every transaction, every conversation, every login. And so I feel like the government also has slightly less compassion for not being able to find things, because they feel like these days, because of all of our data being recorded on so many different places, that it can be done.
Yeah. And I think too, like, people with gambling addiction, and I know that IRS is going to be more attuned to this, you know, as this thing grows and becomes this new epidemic in the community, because I think they say it's like growing second to opioid addiction, gambling addiction, as online sports betting, all this grows. So the IRS is definitely, I would imagine, like, going to be more attuned to this, going to be really looking at this. The sad part is with gambling addiction, I experienced this myself, is the mental illness that comes with that, the depression, the anxiety. Like, I could probably, you know, when it comes to records and stuff, I can kind of track it back because I have an accounting background, right? So, you know, that's kind of in my thing, but for some people, it's just like, it seems like it'd be reasonable to know about these things, but there's this whole like blackoutness about some of my past years. And I don't mean that as like, I blacked out on my addiction. I just mean it like, because of the mental health, because of the physical side of, or the physical impact of this addiction. It's really hard if you've never experienced addiction to really understand it. But you know, you forget things. Like, even now, 2.5 years in my recovery, I'll have moments where I remember a specific event just all of a sudden, but I couldn't remember it 2 years ago. So it's like, it's a real kind of thing. And it seems like it wouldn't be logical, but I'm just going to give a shout out for those of us who maybe couldn't come up with what we needed to. If I were to get audited, knock on wood, right now, I feel like I would be screwed. You know, to try and like, maybe not entirely, right? But maybe it would definitely be rough.
Yeah. But I mean, that it's with that, it's like, it's a lot of people. I mean, that's our number one issue with audits across the board, regardless of like what kind of audit is substantiation and evidence mm-hmm. of their deduction, of their expense, of their loss. That is just one of the hardest parts of tax, is the documentation element, just because a burden does fall on the taxpayer. Now, there is reasonable cause and an audit if you get an accuracy-related penalty, like lack of ability to obtain records. And then again, you could kind of pull in the mental and physical disability. You probably have to get medical records. And then again, it ends up on some kind of discretion,
right,
of who we're dealing with. I mean, a lot of times I just have to remind the agents, again, it's hard if you've never been in somebody else's shoes. And so as like an advocate for people, I often have to remind them. I remember I had a doctor one time that didn't file and pay her payroll taxes because she was being physically abused while pregnant. She was thrown down the stairs and, how that would end. And so she didn't file her payroll taxes. And the government's response was, this doctor should have had somebody prepare and file the payroll tax returns if she couldn't do it herself or her business. I was like, well, I'm sure while she was having, she didn't end up having that baby and she was fleeing a domestic violence situation, the first thing was, man, I should really get someone to file those payroll taxes for me. I'm sure that was her first thought. And so a lot of times, like bringing back in people's like humanity and their compassion, a lot of times I'll have clients like write their own letters from their own perspective, because someone on the other side is a human.
Right.
It starts off as a computer in most of these cases, but at the end of the day, it ends with a person. And so really telling that person's story and how they got here, being a good storyteller, and then tying that in with some evidence of what you're saying, like, oh, I had this addiction and I was going through depression. If we have medical records or you saw a psychiatrist or whatever, we could kind of piece these things together. Or we could get friends and family to write an affidavit about, I was telling you before we got on this call, somebody left my name on their note, their exit the planet note. I don't know where this is all being streamed. So I feel like I'm used to doing this on TikTok where we just dance around real words. They left to exit this planet notes and my name and number was left on there. And that was one of the worst things that's like ever happened to me as a lawyer. And they had a gambling addiction. And the person that called me was a relative of theirs. And they said in their letter, oh, I've already paid for this tax attorney. Call her and she's going to help. And I had just spoken to this person maybe like a month before this happened. They told me they were going to rehab, that they were fixing their life. And I remember I said, don't worry about the IRS. Like, we'll fix it when you get out. Not even worried about it. Like, good luck. Get better. Call me, when you're ready to deal with it. And until then, I'll just keep doing what I'm doing. And then the next call I got was from the family member. And then I had to call his wife, who had three kids, and explain all the money that they owed to the government that she had no idea that they owed. Mm. That story is like really hard for me because, somebody on the other side of that could be like, well, how could she not know how to do the law? And it's like, this person hid every little facet of their life from her. She didn't have access to their bank accounts. She didn't know anything about their business. She didn't know that they owed all this money, and then to find out, you're going to be a single parent of three kids and you're under a mountain of debt. And he thought that that was the only way to help them. That's really sad. And like, that's so important that somebody on the other side of this, even at a government agency, can understand, these people aren't just numbers on a page. They're not just cases to be worked. They're like people living their lives, having real things happen to them. And the last thing on anybody's mind when they're having real things happen to them is whether or not they filed and paid their taxes.
Right. And it's one of those things too, we're having this conversation and somebody else is listening and they're feeling this overwhelming burden, right? Of like one more thing they have to deal with. And the IRS, when you're really under, can just be another very scary thing for the things you mentioned in the beginning. Will I go to jail? This debt is just, and another thing with the IRS is just the amount of interest and penalty that it just can make your amount grow and be extremely overwhelming. And it just feels like there's no out. right? It just feels like if you don't have the money to settle with them or, you know, even hire somebody to help you navigate it, it just feels like this extremely heavy burden. And I'm so happy to have this conversation with you so that people listening, I mean, not necessarily that maybe didn't come out right when it, after telling that story, but so that people listening, knows that there are ways to fix this, that it is not the end of things.
It is not the end. And that's why I try to remind people is tax, once the returns are filed, whether you did it or the government did it, there is a statute of limitations. It's the general rule is 10 years. So it's something that's fleeting. And to know that it has an end, like, yeah, could the government renew it? Can they make it stay around for a long time? They can, yes, they can. But again, we're talking like worst case scenario, they really have to be mad at you. And you really have to be a pretty bad taxpayer. It's just not something that happens frequently.
More than likely, it's more about the fraud and like more about the criminal activity side of things to really get them stirred up.
Right. And then people that are like obviously being evasive, not having a mental or physical health issue, not having an addiction issue. You know, those kind of like more extreme cases are reserved for that. But to people know it's fleeting and all financial problems, are solvable. I mean, I've spent many years as a bankruptcy attorney before really just focusing on tax. And that's why I do a lot of tax work is like, I do a lot of collection work, like helping people with like levies and wage garnishments and audits that then turn into collection issues. And people are really scared, but like, you know, if you really don't have the ability to pay and you can show the government that they're going to leave you alone. Right. The only time people have really, really bad outcomes with the government is if you ignore them and you don't respond. Like that's it. They send letters, you respond to letters, you know, they say they're going to levy you. You have a right to appeal. You file the appeal. You explain why you can't pay them, you know, at a suite. Really sweet client, actually, that I got off TikTok. And she DM'd me after she had signed up with my firm. And I was like, no client of mine should ever DM me. Not like I was mad that she DM'd me. I was mad that she didn't feel like she could call me, like after having my contact information, my email, you know. And she was like, well, I just thought this would be quicker to DM you. But she's a single mom. She didn't file returns. The government did it for her, right? And that could happen to somebody that's a gambler that hadn't filed. Like that's kind of a normal course of things. You put your head in the sand because something's going on and the government did it for her. They didn't have her dependents on there. They didn't have the right tax, right? So they say she owes them like 30 grand. They levy her. She is about to lose her apartment, like with a kindergartner. And as somebody that has a 2-year-old and 4-year-old, I was like, this is outrageous. The agents weren't calling her back. She hired us. And, you know, she DM'd me and she's like, I'm really, really scared. And I was like, we've got this. Like, you just hired us on Friday. I think it had been one day. I was like, you got to give me a few more days, right? Like, if you don't respond to the IRS notices and you come in hot at the fourth quarter, you got to give me at least a day or two to help. And we ended up escalating it to the territory manager. We finally get someone. She files her original returns. She's due like $8,000 refund.
Wow.
She should have never been levied. You know, but it was like one of those things, she was just like paralyzed from fear. She's about to lose her apartment. She didn't have a lot of money. I think we did like a very low payment plan for her to get started with our firm. The other thing that if people are struggling financially and you're really struggling, you're below the poverty line, you're really destitute, you don't have anything. People should be aware there is a low income taxpayer clinic available. If you go to the Taxpayer Advocate's website, you can use a Taxpayer Advocate if you have a tax dispute. That is a free service. But also the Low Income Taxpayer Clinic, if you go to the Taxpayer Advocate website, you can find a low income taxpayer clinic near you. And if you earn a certain amount of income and you're at the poverty line or you're really struggling, and you have a certain amount of dispute, they will actually represent you for free. So that's a good resource. I'm actually on the board of a low income taxpayer clinic. And so we end up helping people there. If you need to file a tax court case, like the process for challenging the federal government on an improper assessment is pretty easy. And a lot of times, you know, they will assign you a tax attorney if you have a simple case. So there are resources and things you can do if you can't afford representation. Obviously, I told you, I have a step-by-step resolve your own tax problem. It's not specific for gambling issues, but it's more general in resolving back taxes. We're giving all your listeners a discount for that course. I think it's $79, but there's 15% off. If they want to take the course, we're giving out the code is BG23. So I'll send you the link if you want to post that with the video. And then they just enter that coupon code and they'll get a discount. But it also provides like a discussion board and stuff where people can help each other. We want to obviously try to create a community for people because a lot of tax problems, I don't think require a tax attorney. And people get scared and then they end up getting scammed by television ads or radio ads because they're scared. And so they think, you know, somebody called me the other day and said they paid somebody $18,000 for like a $30,000 problem. I was like, sir, that is wild. But when you're scared, that's a prime time for people to take advantage of you. So I would highly recommend if you're going to get professional help, I don't even care if people use me or not, find a local person, go meet with them in person or do a video call with them. Don't hire like some nationwide scammy ad people, you know, view their credentials. If they're say they're CPA, look them up. You can look up verify CPA. If they say they're a lawyer, ask them what state they're barred in, go to the state bar, look up their name, make sure they're licensed. All those things, right? Because we don't want people out there. It's really easy to get scammed because somebody wants to tell you something that you want to hear because you're afraid. And you really shouldn't be. Like I said, the IRS is, are they scary? Maybe. But once you know how the system works and you start taking basic steps to solve the problem, it's all solvable. And it's, I've never had a case where I'm like, yeah, I mean, there's criminal cases, but I'm like, oh, you committed a crime. But for most everyday people aren't committing crimes. There's so much noise on the internet that they get confused and they don't know what the actual first step is.
Yeah. And I think for me, like during this whole process for me, the last few years is just like knowledge kind of helps me overcome those fears. So it's like the more you know about the process, which is why this course that you offer is going to be really helpful, I think, to somebody who wants to kind of know what's going on and maybe how to navigate it. So I think that's going to be great because that's one of the things that really kind of helped me overcome my own fears for that. So yeah. And if somebody wants to work with you directly, how can they reach you?
Oh yeah. Our website is www.atltaxlawyers.com. I highly encourage people. I post a lot of content on TikTok. Free advice on TikTok. I always say I'm going to stop doing it. I'm like, I get one more mean comment, I'm going to go cry in my room. It is hard. Everybody's so mean. Like, I remember when I first started, people were like, oh my gosh, this woman doesn't even do her makeup right. And I was like, I'm not even talking about makeup. I'm literally giving whatever. I know. It's like, no good deed goes unpunished, you know? But I just want your listeners to know that, like, no matter how much anxiety or stress you feel, the financial stuff, even if it's like credit card debt or tax debt, any kind of debt, it's easily solvable. The thing that's not solvable, I think, what I always try to remind people of is like my husband's in healthcare. You can have the best doctor in the world and they might not be able to fix some kind of diagnosis that you have. At least with tax debt and financial issues, those are always solvable.
Well, again, thank you so much for your time. You actually joined me kind of late on an evening because, you know, this is just how we roll. I appreciate it. I will put all your contact information in the show notes so that way people can reach out to you. You work with people nationwide on federal tax stuff that you can work with. State stuff is a little trickier and, you know, by state. So it's kind of hard to do that, but So they can reach out to you. And what is your TikTok handle? I can't think of it right off.
Oh, it's ATL Tax Lawyers. So it's very easy.
Well, and it's really great because I scroll TikTok usually in the evenings, and I came across it and I was just like so fascinated. I was like, this is wonderful. She's out there. You know, most of us are trying to figure this out. And then here she is, this beautiful girl out here, like just sharing like all her wisdom and information with us for free. And that's really great. And again, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm really excited about helping any of your listeners and just giving them information, you know, and making them know that it's fine. The path to recovery is hard, and all these little nuanced things in life have to get picked up and put back in place, but it's not that big of a lift once you get started.
No, for most of us, it's just about pulling our heads out of the sand and like, and actually just forcing, like, even for myself, when I was having to figure this out, it was just like, just sitting down and looking at it. It's just like, there's so many facets to recovery. You know, you have to learn to set with your feelings, and you have to learn to look at your taxes, and you have to learn to do all these things. And it can just be really overwhelming, but all we can do is just take it one day at a time, one step at a time, and get our lives, you know, rebuild our lives, build a life that we don't want to escape from. That's our goal. We got to stop the bleeding and start the healing. So, all right. Thanks so much.
Thank you.